and welcome to Hanalyze This, the self-help podcast that just can't help itself. I am one of two Hannahs, Hannah Hart.
And I'm Hannah Gelb.
And today, in the age-old fashion of Mythbusters myth-busting, we are going to talk about seven pop psychology myths that we may or may not bust. Are they busted? Let's find out. Listen to the episode now. Enjoy.
Hello, my buddy.
Hello, my sweet friend.
It's so good to see your face.
It's so good to see you.
It feels like it's been so long.
It has. It has been so long. I mean, I think we'll do like a longer update in our Patreon. But Hannah Gelb, very briefly,
very briefly. No.
You know, with
we are on a schedule, people.
Ooh, maybe I'll set a timer. What about 1 minute? What about 1 minute? Could you do it in 1 minute?
Ooh, yeah, go. Okay, wait. Okay, let me know when you're okay.
Okay, I'm getting a timer out. The question is, last time you were here, wait, what is the name of the episode that was the last time you were here? I mean, that you were able to, because what was it?
Oh my gosh, I think it was the Bear Cycle.
Oh, that was a great one. That's a great
one.
That was Sammy Davis, Bear Cycle, somewhere around there. Okay. Hannah Gelb, in 1 minute. Wait, let me look at the... I think we have about a month to cover. A month in a minute.
Oh, my goodness.
How's the last month of your life been? Starting now.
Okay, so let's see. A lot has changed or happened. I don't know. I went to Peru. It was magical. It was so magical. I want to live there now. It was beautiful and the people were lovely and it just was such a lovely... It's so important to travel, you know, because when I was there, I was like, oh my gosh, I feel like I'm just a person in the human chain and like my problems aren't so big and like it's a big world out there, you know? It's
big
like,
world.
God, I have to leave the house sometimes. Also, I fully... quit my job. Fully.
20 seconds left.
Fully. Wish I could tell you guys that I'm the happiest I've ever been. Life continues to be hard, but that's okay and as expected.
What'd you do this morning?
I have been doing some coffee gigging. So I did some catering.
Okay, that's it.
Yeah.
Oh, listen to that. That's the timer.
Oh, hey. So that's what I've been doing.
Hannah Gelb has much to say, much to update on in life, and we are really, really, really excited to hear about it, mainly because I love the fact that you are an excellent coffee connoisseur and that you make a good cup of joe and that you know make the lattes and the cappuccinos and blah, blah, blah.
I just love an opportunity to be snobby about something.
Yeah. And really interestingly, after quitting your day job, which was your desk job, quote unquote, and picking up this gig work in a catering place, you also said that you're making more money now?
It turns out hourly, I am getting paid more than I was at my previous full-time job. So
my God, that's...
I don't know what to tell anybody. It's just... you know what? The world has no rules, much like they say in Everything Everywhere All the Time All at Once. Googly eyes all the way. There are no rules. So just whatever you want to do, just do it. Try things. You know, Taika Waititi didn't do movies until he was 30.
Boom. Oh my God, that's great.
He did get very lucky. But also he just was like, I guess I'll try this now.
Yeah. I definitely think we definitely need a Hannah on Hannah episode update under our book. So let's get that one. Because I've also redirected my life path. But maybe we'll do that towards, so we'll get into that later. But because today we are going to be going through this article or this outline that the wonderful, beautiful Becca Bott made. It is based off an article that she found that says seven common pop psychology myths you might be spreading.
Absolutely, so, you are.
And absolutely I am. And in fact, this outline, whew, I'll tell you what, I would say, spoiler alert, 3 out of the 4 things I think work. So we're gonna enjoy that. But let me read this little intro. We've all seen it. The article that showcases a new finding in the psychology world, usually on a low stakes issue. It's clickbait because we want to know, can I really rewire my brain in 3 easy steps? Can I hack my own body to make it do the things I want, even when my past efforts have failed? Today, we're taking a closer look at some pop psychology hits to see if they hold up when, or if they held up when put to the test. Oh, the minute timer just went off again.
Oh, you! Good job, buddy. You did that was more intro than a minute. In 1 minute.
It must have been a different timer. That was really weird. Who knows?
All right, so what is up for reconsideration? The first pop psychology myth has to do with learning styles. And we have been told that people learn differently. And students learn material better if the teaching method matches their learning style. So we right. have visual learners, oral learners, or like auditory learners, reading and writing learners, and kinesthetic learners. Turns out the later finding was when people receive information in their preferred learning style, they feel they have learned it better, but they haven't actually. The most effective pedagogic technique varies according to the type of material, not the student. And I was shocked to learn this and a little hurt because...
This is based off a 2016 study in the British Journal of Psychology. So just to put that out there, this is through the lens of... that, you know.
Of 2016, which was, was a rough...
Yeah, I'm not actively diminishing education. What was her name? Betty Davos? Or what was that name of that
God,
terrible person?
Yeah.
They're like, you know what? Kids don't learn anything. They're just tools for the machine. It doesn't matter if they absorb the material or not. What matters is what they produce after it. But Hannah Gelb, how does this make you feel? Because it makes me mad.
Well, it makes me mad as well. And also I know a few people who are teachers, and the impression I get from them is there is a one size fits all style of public education that like hurts and fails many students. But maybe that's really more to do with the fact that we live in a hellscape and we also fail just all humans. Like, it's not even like, oh, I can't learn this. It's like, I can't learn this because I don't have food and my dad's out of work. And also I have like a mental illness, but there's no mental health care in the schools. And you, my teacher who teaches me social studies, has to be a social worker, even though that's not your job. But I don't see how, like, what would they do? Like, if they're like, okay, we're teaching geology, what would they do differently? Or, yeah, I don't know. To conclude, I'm upset.
Okay. So, what the study says is that the most effective pedagogic technique varies according to the type of material, not the type of student. So, I'm going to say that what they're saying is that this is what they're saying is that like the material being learned, math, science, history, English, whatever, depending on what the material is, that should quote unquote be taught in a visual, oral, reading and writing, or kinesthetic way. So visual meaning images, maps, graphics, oral meaning listening and speaking, reading and writing as in taking notes, reading something, taking notes, etc., or kinesthetic, tactile, experiential learning. Hannah, I completely agree with your first take on this, is that I really don't understand how they could have gotten a control group for this study that was accurate, you know? Because let's just look at the role anxiety plays in retention. Mm-hmm. So if someone is more responsive to absorbing information, right? So like when your lid is flipped, when your amygdala is firing, when you are upset and activated, you're not putting in long-term memory. It's not making it all the way to the back, you know? It's mm-hmm. making it in short-term immediate response memory, you know, mm-hmm. which is why mm-hmm. have you ever had a fight with someone and they said this? They're like, well, then you said this. And you're like, I don't remember saying that. Mm-hmm. Or if you've ever mm-hmm. gone through a meeting and you're upset about something and later on you're like, oh, what? Blah, blah, blah. Like it's mm-hmm. not. So but whatever. Not a meeting. Meeting's a bad example. But what I'm trying to say is that I don't understand how you could create an all things being equal scenario with humans and children.
Well, yeah, that's an excellent point, because even if
to conduct the study.
Yeah, because it still is assuming, okay, there's a set of kids who are visual and they're all at this one, they're all in this space. There's a set of kids who are audio and they're all in, you know what I mean? Like they're all at the starting line, but it's like they're not all at the starting line.
They're not all at some the starting line.
Some of them are exhausted or like, yeah, didn't get any sleep or have a, you know, like they may be audio, but also have ADHD or like, so.
Yeah, it's confusing, right? Yeah. So like, I mean, I'm sure if we read more about the study and how they determined their control group, we'd learn more if we read more about it. However, that being said, I can see this as a real hurdle to this being like conclusive. I also just have, I don't know, maybe it's because it says it's British, but I also just have this like mass production like rejection instinct, which is like, just because you can't replicate the results at scale doesn't mean learning styles don't exist.
Like, right. Yeah, yeah.
Like, I you know, and I just don't know. And also it doesn't take into like one time Ella was diagnosed with high blood pressure because she was nervous every time she went to the doctor's office. Mm. And so they're like, when she took her blood pressure at home, her blood pressure was totally normal. But at the doctor's office, it was always high. So they were like, mm-hmm. you have high blood pressure. Look at mm-hmm. this. But she could mm-hmm. never replicate the results at home.
Dang, yeah. It's like, you know what? Maybe all the schools just teach terrible, terrible, terrible information. Doesn't have anything to do with learning style.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
Gosh, that's interesting.
And it's also very strange because, like, you know, science is so, when you do science classes and it's like, oh, they're going to retain this information because look at this experiential visual thing. I honestly did not learn it. Like every time there was something like happening in the room that involved like, look at this fire or look at this thing or look at this, the lesson was gone to me. Completely gone. I did not mm-hmm. take in any of it. Mm-hmm. And I define myself as an experiential learner. So right there is an example where, in fact, the learning style did not help because I was so distracted by getting zapped in my hands mm-hmm. that I was like, whoa, huh?
Yeah. Current? Yeah. And you were probably like, you know, sharing some jokes with your buds in class and you're just like, oh, my God, I'm 16. Ah! Like,
yeah, exactly. You know?
Like I think you just have to be. It has to be exciting. Like, it just has to be.
I have. But then sometimes if it's exciting, it's distracting. In that example, I don't remember so much of my science classes. I don't know. It's interesting. It's definitely an interesting thing. I feel like the best way I learned things is visually and experientially. But then also orally, but not readingly.
I have to have been invested and the teacher had to be good. Not good. Like, not just also interested in teaching what they were teaching. I mean, oh my God. Took an economics class. Do you know what I remember from economics?
Huh.
There is no such thing as a free lunch. That's it. I don't remember anything else. And I had it for 2 hours on Wednesdays once a week in high school. And also Monday and Tuesday and Friday. Like,
definitely not Thursday, though.
I cannot tell you one thing. No, that was when we had our block days where you had like really long periods.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Oh, God, terrible. But then again, okay, Hannah, but this is another good example proving that the article says the pedagogic technique varies according to the type of material.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, but how could... Very, yeah, this is dangerous for me because I just want to like sink back into like nothing is real, you know, like.
Don't we need our pop psychology myths to assume we have some semblance of control? Let's wait. Okay. So let's try.
Yes, we do. I think we
in terms of this first one, learning styles, in terms of this first myth, quote unquote, that the idea is that students learn material better if the teaching method matches their learning style. I suppose that when I say learning styles, I'm going to say I agree now with this because I didn't realize that I was changing the learning style based on the type of material. For instance, in like my literature and philosophy classes and history classes, I was absorbed when they were just speaking it to me. But then if it's a bad speaker... Ugh, I hate it. I hate all of this.
I don't think we can determine anything. And also, pop psychology helps us imagine that there are patterns in the world that make sense. And
but here's the thing, man. If somebody was going to sit there and talk to me about math, I would not pick up any of it and would need visual. So, oh my God.
But what human can just hear about math and be like, oh yeah.
Well, see, that's what the study is saying, is that somebody who is an auditory learning style, even if they say they have a learning style, just hearing about math isn't enough. So it depends on the type of material.
Yeah. No, I think it's shit. Yeah. Because math is inherently visual. Like, I just don't, like, you know?
Yeah, no, I do. I do know. You're right. So you're right. They should teach math visually and speak the words auditorially. Well, I'm less mad at this study now and more just mad at education again. So in terms of my personal analysis, I would say that learning styles are in fact not a pop psychology myth, but in fact are a variable that should be factored in.
Yes, I agree. And also, yeah, I would not say from now on, learning styles is bullshit. Like, no. I think there's some truth.
What
there.
Is a learning style without a teaching style?
Ah, yes.
You know, I mean, they are one. If they are one and the same, then you just got to match them up, you know, something like that. But I guess that like my analysis is like, oh, okay, I get that. So, damn. Okay, well, let's see if we can get mad about the other ones. And we'll check if we can get mad about the other ones right after this.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Welcome back, everybody. We are talking about pop psychology myths, and I know that Hannah does not want to get off course today, but this also makes me want to talk about just pop myths in general. Like that one about how, like, everybody eats like 3 spiders a year. People love to say that, you know?
Oh, yeah, that is true.
Anyways, on to number two.
On to number two, power stance. The idea, power posing will make you feel bolder, elevate your testosterone, decrease cortisol, and increase willingness to make risky bets?
Wait, why do I want to elevate my testosterone?
Why do I want to make risky bets? Okay, let's ignore that. Here's my definition of power stance.
Yeah.
instead of shrinking in, putting your shoulders back. And this is like a therapeutic technique. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. let's see. Let me just see what this thing says and then we'll get into it. So I'll read this one. Okay. This article defines power stances as stand with feet apart and hands on hips, stand with feet apart and hands outstretched, sit with legs on the desk. That's a different definition of power stances than I've ever heard. Here we go. The original study was pretty small. Larger study at a later date could not replicate the results. The original scientists protested that 33 studies found a power pose effect, but those 33 studies were reviewed by objective parties and they were determined to have evidence too weak to call it proven. Huh? Okay, so how do we feel about power stances? I have experiential evidence, but could go ahead.
Oh, mm-hmm. Well, I would say that this is, I don't see how this could work beyond a placebo effect or like a, if you think it works, then it works. And right. if you don't think it works, then it doesn't work. Like
correct. Yeah, exactly. If standing with your shoulders back makes you feel better, then it mm-hmm. works. If
and I can see how like, you know, like I definitely if caught myself in like uncomfortable situations or conversations or meetings or whatever, like I'll be like, oh, I am literally trying to become small and like shrinking in on myself and have my like hands in my like my lap
in your lap like a little good girl
exactly fuck that. So if I actively I'm like oh okay then I think I do feel better, but I don't know if I would ever like wake up in the morning and then be like power stance. Unless by power stance you mean the pose that Sailor Moon makes when she transforms.
I mean, she could. Yeah, that's I think it would feel great.
I actually do. You got now that I'm back doing coffee stuff, I like to say barista powers activate.
Barista powers activate. Here's my analysis.
Just to give myself that little boost. That's some pop psychology for you. Sorry. Okay.
Hey, here's why I think it works. yes. Because humans, what they are not accounting for in this is that we are such sedentary creatures now that so many people have lost a connection to their body because they have to desensitize the connection to their body to sit in a chair for 8 hours a day or stand at a register for 8 hours a day, blah, 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 blah. So power stances, I really, really believe in because when you are giving your body the signals of if your mind is interpreting itself as being threatened, and your body is responding to the threat by mimicking the pose, then you're creating a cycle where you're like, I am threatened, I am small. 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 Mm-hmm. And in that, your actions will be affected by that. Like, remember what we learned in the bear cycle? Like, beliefs reinforce your action. Beliefs enforce emotions, which result in actions, which cause results, which lead back to reinforcing your beliefs. So, stretching is good for you. Mm. How can a power stance not have an effect on you when it's basically stretching?
Right, and it is movement of any kind.
of any kind!
you know? I mean, they say literally like 5 seconds of exercise is better than no.
None.
Like no
exercise. So you know what's exercise? Standing is exercise versus sitting. Look, my mom... I love her so much. She is a very sedentary person, right? And I ask her to walk and to stand up and move around because to just sit, you know, I'm just like, just make sure you're standing like every 4 hours, please. Just stand up every 2 hours, please. She does a mile walk a day, which is really great. But then that's literally it. But that being said, like just being connected to your body is powerful. Therefore, I analyze power stances as being 10 out of 10. Very important. I believe it. Pull your shoulders back. Give yourself confidence. Be brave by being vulnerable. Expose your soft innards to the world.
Yeah, I would even take it a step further. Like do that power stance and then go into like your favorite musical number. like yes. on the bus, in the office, at the yes. coffee shop, just be like, I'm here. And then you can be like, the Phantom of the Opera is there. You will make other people happier because they'll be like, mm-hmm. what is happening right now? I have been pulled out of my normal comatose state because someone is singing in the coffee shop.
And last but not least, sitting with legs on the desk, I have never heard of that as a power stance. But maybe that's just saying to someone who has to do a lot of reading, like if you have to read a lot and you're holding
I feel like that's only a power stance if there is someone across the desk that you are like trying to intimidate or something.
Well, that's not power then. That's just aggression.
Well, some people would call that power. For example, Jordan Peterson.
Very good point.
Dick.
Famous asshole, Jordan Peterson. Hannah, what's your analysis of power stances? I'm pro power stance.
My analysis is if you enjoy it and it makes you feel good, fucking do it.
I
stand by what I said about also bursting into song.
I agree. Unless someone finds it distracting. People are different
unless,
from each
unless
other.
Unless you're like in a library because mm-hmm. that is a... You know, people are
a pre-designated inappropriate venue for bursting into song, madam. You are in the library. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Hannah, will you walk us through our next myth?
Yes. And I can tell you that this one will make me mad. Okay. next myth. Smiling, just the physical act of smiling makes you happy. The idea we were given, holding a pen between the teeth to force a smile caused people to find cartoons funnier than when they held a pen between their lips. The later finding in a bigger study was it didn't hold up. Is the pen to blame? What's going on with smiling? How do we feel about this one? This is so funny because I literally was doing a guided meditation yesterday and I was like in a very kind of depressed and anxious state. And it was like, meditation for depression. And then it was like, okay, the first thing I want you to do is pull your lips back into a smile. And then I was like, fuck you, and turned it off. So I think this is on a case by case. I feel like I've heard this often and have tried it. Like if I'm really sad, just forcing myself to smile. And then it kind of like compounds, like it might make me think of something funny. But then there's times when if you're in a certain mood or place and someone's like, well, have you tried smiling? I'd be like, have you tried shutting up?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I agree, Hannah, but not the shutting up part. Just that's not my words. But I agree in that if you suffer from chemical depression, smiling mm-hmm. will not help as much as you wish. Like if you have a chemical predisposition, if you are lacking serotonin, for instance, oh man, by the way, serotonin and reuptake inhibitors, it's fascinating stuff. But I don't know. I don't think so. I think smiling makes you happy if someone's smiling back at you. Like when I go on a walk and I'm like walking Luna, I'm usually, when I'm out in the world, I am smiling and I get more smiles back because I have a happy face on. And mm-hmm. seeing people mm-hmm. smile at me makes me happy. And then I smile more. Blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. But no, if I'm like chemically depressed, just the thought of trying to wedge a smile on my face. Oh, God.
Yeah. In fact, the whole, like, I feel like
it's not going to reach your eyes. The teeth.
It's not even going to get up to like past your laugh lines. I mean,
no.
Now, I feel like the joy and the beauty of the smile is that it's involuntary. It exists at all. And when you see other people doing it, it triggers a reaction in you. But to be like, well, just force it up there.
I guess if being forced to do something doesn't make you feel upset. Plus, I've also tried the smile thing, but I do it when I don't want people to perceive how upset I am. I smile as a defense mechanism. That's not mm-hmm. No. So how do we feel about this one? I'm gonna say busted.
I'm gonna also say busted.
Busted. Okay. Next, this one One, two, three. Wow. Okay, here we go. Next. Finite willpower. Wow. Okay, I've never heard of this, so let's see what this definition says. Finite willpower. The idea we are given. If you draw on your willpower to do one thing, you'll have less of it to resist other temptations later. You may also hear it as ego depletion. Example, if you resist buying something you really want in the afternoon, you're more likely to give in to choosing the more indulgent dessert choice later that night. Okay.
Is this the same as decision fatigue a little bit?
Ugh. I bet. It sounds like it could be. It sounds like decision fatigue is the real part, but finite willpower, which I've never heard of. But how is this a pop psychology? Well, anyway, the later finding. Labs studying nearly 2,000 participants found that the draining self-control in one task had close to zero effect on people's capacity for self-control in a subsequent task. So finite willpower, the idea that willpower is finite. I do not believe that. I've never heard of that. I have experienced fatigue just at the end of the day. I think that this is ego depletion. Interesting. Hannah, what's your take?
I would say bust it, because I enjoy saying that in that style. And also because I think it's too, well, at least this information that we have is too simple, because I feel like, especially in the last 5 to 10 years, like the idea of like discipline or willpower is really not the issue. It seems it's more like
resource,
more like what is your relationship with the thing that needs mm-hmm. to get done, or like, and also what is your relationship with yourself? Like, even if you're like, I really want to do this thing, if you're like, fucking asshole, do this thing, mm-hmm. you're gonna really not have a lot of energy, because that's so draining.
Mm-hmm. And if it's like, man, at night, I really crave sugar. I strongly, strongly, strongly crave sugar at night. Mm-hmm. That craving is not a moral, it's neither good nor bad. It's something to note about yourself, which is like, I have a really hard time resisting sugar at night. Well, there might be a biochemical reason why you get into a very craving sugar state at night. You might be really sad because you hate your roommates and sugar makes you feel good. Like, I don't know, man. There's so many X factors.
It's right. You know, that's a really good point, dude, is that, and I have to have this pointed out to me all the time, is there is no reason to make nothing requires a moral judgment.
Correct.
And I feel like that has to be, I have to remind myself of that all the time, because I'll just be like, 100%. Well, I'm bad. Like, I'm just bad for, like,
if you're like
being a human being who's alive with a body. Like, what?
And it's like the willpower aspect. So if you've hated your life all day long and then at night, you're just like, fine, I'll eat it. But you've been told by the doctor, oh, you're pre-diabetic. You can't eat sugar at night. It's going to really mess you up. Then it becomes a, quote unquote, a more of a, like, then it enters into the, like, love place, like, self-love place, which I think could be stated in moral, like, in terms of, like, well, for my physical health, I need to resist. I need to find another outlet that's not sugar at night to meet the needs that I'm having regularly, mm-hmm, you know? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that's that. I think it takes more into like the self-care category. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like there's a little room for good or bad there, you know, like a little,
like
but I hate those terms.
Yeah. Yeah. It's tough because I think that dichotomy of good and bad is just so ingrained in our society. Like, we're like, well, if you're poor, you're weak and lazy. If you're, you know, just like all these things that just kind of seem to be
good and bad only exists within the, like, if there's a parenthetical next to it that says like, for me, for mm-hmm. my health. Mm-hmm. So it's like I'm really trying to resist sugar at night because mm-hmm. of my health, because my body can't take the amount of sugar I'm eating on a regular basis at night. That right. can like, be, you know
I'm
what
being,
I mean?
I'm being a good parent to myself. If yeah. I had a child, I would not be like, yeah, you can eat whatever you want because I don't give a fuck. I'd be like, no, I want you to live.
Yeah, and if you had a child and they were like, your child is pre-diabetic, you what do they do? And you're like, oh, they do eat a lot of sugar and then fall asleep.
You're like, well, I do just give them whatever they ask for all the time. Yeah. Actually, yeah. they only eat drumsticks, those
yeah. Yeah. Ice so finite willpower, I'm going to say busted. I'm going to say exhaustion, decision fatigue, real.
Yeah, because I do find if you do like if I don't know, make my bed, that is technically something that requires willpower. But the doing it is it makes me more energized. Usually I'm like, oh,
yeah,
wow, I did 100%.
I make my bed every day. It's very important to me. It's really important to me. Mm-hmm. It's movement. Mm-hmm. It makes me really happy when I go to bed at night. I mean, that's mm-hmm. not a myth up here. I guess I didn't. Or well, I don't know. Because we have three myths left that we're going to check out right after this. And we're back. We have three pop psychology myths left to bust or not. So, Hannah Gelb, why don't you take us into our next one?
Yes, it is called the Lady Macbeth effect, and
what?
I did read this last night and was very confused. Okay, the Lady Macbeth effect is this idea. People who are doing bad stuff will be really excited about cleaning their bods.
Wait a minute.
Wait, so okay.
I'm sorry,
oh,
cleaning
wait.
Their what? Cleaning their bods as in bodies?
So this is like, oh, I've been doing morally ambiguous tasks all day. I really want to take a shower. That's the idea, I guess.
Okay, read it to me. So, read me this highlighted section.
This is extrapolated from the fact that people in a study copied a sabotage story by hand and afterward found hygiene products more desirable than people who copied a story about helping people. Oh, interesting. Okay, the later finding. It didn't hold up. Extrapolating is not real life.
Study people doing bad things and washing, if you want to talk about people doing bad things and washing. I have never heard about this Lady Macbeth effect. I mean, the only way I could extrapolate on this one is that if I have, let's say, rolled around, you know me, let's say I've had a little too much drink, you know, let's say I've crawled on some tables, let's say I've spilt some drinks, let's say I've made a mess, then yeah, the next day I definitely will feel shitty because the imbalance of chemicals in my brain and body, and B, I probably am a little dirty, so washing is good. I like to wash just
I
general,
like a shower is always, it's like a good refresh.
Yeah,
you know,
I love washing my hands now that I've learned how to wash them properly, apparently.
Maybe I just haven't done enough nefarious deeds. I feel like I really can't speak to this one very much because I'm like, I'm trying to think of like the what is some like across the board bad quote unquote deed I have done and then afterward been like, oh, God, out. Damn spot. I must wash my hands.
I too have never thought. I have never had this experience either, which like, is why I guess it's paired with the other two pop psychology myths that are here as well. Because I don't think there's much to say about this except, yeah.
Except we're not the right people to ask. You'd have to ask Jeffrey Epstein. Whoops, can't. Sorry, that was dark. Whatever. you know, people of that caliber.
Yeah. And hey, whatever happened to all those people like on those lists of like, you know, I don't, whatever. There's no accountability. Okay. Let's move on to the next one. Okay. So that I'm going to say Lady Macbeth effect, busted. I'm going to put this in the category of never heard of it and busted.
I'm going to put it in the category of only applies to like 6% of the population.
Yeah, probably. There you go. Okay, next. Big Brother is watching. Okay, so here's the idea. The idea we were given. Eyes in the artwork will make people behave better within the honor system than when the artwork isn't watching them. Later finding, this was proven in a small study. A bigger study could not replicate it. How do we feel about this?
I can't say.
So here, this is another behavior based. This is giving me yuck again. I'm like, is this why people like that eyes on you will make you behave differently? But like inanimate eyes?
I do think, yeah. So my mind goes to the general idea of knowing you're being watched. Does that make you behave differently? And I would say probably yes.
Yeah, by a living thing, not an inanimate object.
But
I got all these eyes looking at me right now.
Specifically, eyes in the artwork. Okay, well, here's a fun experiment.
Look at all those eyeballs.
I could do. What if I just put like a ton of googly eyes all over my wall? Does that count or does it have to have a face?
Eyes without a face. I don't know, Hannah. I really don't know.
That sounds like cool decor. I want to try this. It does sound like,
yeah, I like it. I am pro googly eyes in a big way.
I'm so pro googly eyes, especially after watching Everything Everywhere All at Once.
I know. Great movie, you know, guys. We should do an episode. Our next episode should be shows we loved, movies we loved, and just do a little fun. We've spent all this time talking about pop psychology. Let's give pop culture a shot. You know?
Hannah Hart, you have just such a good wordsmith.
Oh, thank you, my friend. Take us into our last myth so we can get the hell out of here.
Oh, yeah. This is...
That's not it. It's above
definitely
that.
A myth. Okay. Or, okay, I mean, this is definitely a pop psychology thing. Okay.
Yeah, I'm ready. I'm so in.
Wear red to attract a mate. The idea we were given, men find women in red sexier than women in other colors. The later finding, small study strikes again. Could not be replicated in the much larger study. How do we feel about this one? I'm going to go ahead and say every man is a complex human being created out of 1,000 factors. There is absolutely no way that all of them could possibly think that red is the best color for a woman to wear.
I'm going to go ahead and say people respond to colors in different ways based off both their experiences they've had with those colors in the past and the way light affects their brains.
That's a good point. Did they even consider colorblind people?
Or did they even consider like people respond to color and light differently, and light and color are connected. So you cannot do a study about color without also perceiving how your synapses are responding to light. And not all stimulation is good stimulation. Also, that's all I have to say about that. Wearing red to attract a mate. Huh. Yeah, I never wear red, but that's just me. I mean, this has a little red in it, a little pop of color right here.
No, it's just not. It's just like not one of my
go-to.
I feel like both of us prefer like a blue or a green.
I do wear red when I'm going to a meeting. Like if I'm trying to do something professional, I will wear a brighter, more strong, eye-catching color. Like I wouldn't wear this muted navy shirt.
Oh, so that is like, so that's like a different avenue of pop psychology. Like wearing like a brighter red is like, I mean business.
Yeah, but I feel better. So it's about me, and I'm, and if I feel better, I will conduct better business. Mm-hmm, you know what I mean? Like you can't tell what's going to go on in somebody else's head. Wow. Okay, Hannah, let's go through these wrap up questions. I'm very proud of us. This has been very fun and delightful. Thank you, Becca Bott, for putting this outline together. Hannah, here's a question I have.
Yes, my friend.
What gives pop psychology things like this higher stakes?
You mean what makes people, why do we want to believe them so badly?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think we just, you know, even if on some level, you kind of know that you don't really believe it. It just is. It's a little cushion between yourself and the reality of the world, which is it is all chaos.
Some small semblance of control could calm
pattern, order,
calm the spirit, calm the mind,
predictability. Yes, I think it's just comforting.
The familiar. It's comforting. Yeah. So yeah, I think. So I think that. The benefit of such silly, silly things, as listed here in Pop Psychology, is that it encourages you to try new things and to not be so singular in your interactions if you are not satisfied with the results, you know? But whether or not you're satisfied with the results is self-knowledge. So if pursuing a path of different pop psychology myths gives you the gift of self-knowledge, what you do with that self-knowledge, whether you ignore it or you accept it or whatever, is entirely up to you. So my wrap-up is, doesn't matter to me. Do what works for you.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm kind of there with you, buddy. I feel like there's no, if you, for example, see that thing that wants you to click on it, that's like five ways to like be a better person, there's no reason to get bogged down by it or immediately go into all the reasons why you think you should be a better person. You can be like, that is part of this cultural offering at the moment. It's not a universal truth at all. If that was true, we wouldn't have, you know, philosophy and writing going back to like thousands and thousands of years.
If you see an article that says five ways to make you a better person, and then when you read it, you feel bad and sad. If you were felt bad and sad beforehand, and you feel bad and sad after reading it, don't read it again.
Don't be like,
look at this definitive truth on this random website.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Oh, my God. And I have been absolutely guilty of doing that.
Oh, Kelby, no.
Of reading random list by person I don't know who's like, oh, yeah, you know that age-old fucking question of, like, what matters in life and how to live your life? We got it in five bullet points if you want to check this out. And I'm like, oh my God, it's so obvious.
But then you get to fulfill your desire to feel less than. So, hey, win-win again. No, I tried
you
to
get
turn
to, that. You get to talk about it on a podcast.
There you go, Kelby. Speaking of podcasts, make sure you like, rate, and review this podcast. If you're not subscribed, please subscribe to it. And if you want to hang out with us over at patreon.com/analyzethis, that's also great. Please send us your thoughts about the ideas we reviewed. Do these seem bunk? Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, Kelby. What are your favorite pop psychology myths? Or just your favorite myths in general? I would love to know.
What myths work the magic in you? Let us know online. And remember, self-knowledge is the fruit of all power. The seed of all power. You are the fruit. Okay.
That forever.
Forever.com/now. Okay. Goodbye, everybody. Have a great day.
Goodbye.